He is here with us every night. We're going to stay with this format until this issue is resolved one way or another, or at least brought into control. It appears to be that we are recording nightly what will be, at some point in time, a complete audio history of a major, massive pandemic. The New Zealand Herald has a story out on this, which is saying that the sources that they have in China, Wuhan, are reporting that victims who die in hospital are being taken straight to the crematory. No paperwork, nothing. They're burning them. And that would be no surprise to me. They quote a fellow, a Dr. Ryan, and this is what we'll get into with Henry this hour, as estimating the death rate, the case fatality rate for this new virus is about 2%, while saying the death rate for SARS was about 10%. Oh, Dr. Ryan has a lot to learn about numbers, math, and medical science. So there you go. There is a lot going on in this venue right now. We're going to talk to Henry about it. Let me just say one other thing. Report here, and it wouldn't be a surprise, 100,000 Chinese are under observation now, according to sources in the U.S. State Department. Henry, welcome back.
Well, I don't know if it's good to be back, but it's back again, and numbers keep on going up. And
They do.
Keeps on spreading to many, many more countries, and the transmission chains are getting longer and longer. And
the current numbers, let me just run this down real quickly, and back to you. Known, this is from Recombinomics.com, that's Henry's website. Known cases in China have jumped now to 29,779. It's 30,000. 11,800 are confirmed cases, and 17,900 are suspected cases. Now, to the Chinese, suspected cases are cases that have already been confirmed, but only once. They want two tests. So just understand that. You got 30,000 confirmed cases in China. Some with two confirmations, some with one. All right? Just understand. That's how big it is. We've got a lot of interesting things happening here in Europe, especially Spain reports its first case today. An NCOV confirmed Santa Clara County. That's the Bay Area in California, out of Wuhan, Bay Area's first case. And if this gets loose over here, one of the first areas it's going to concentrate on is the homeless in these big cities. It's going to go through them like a power lawnmower. All right, Henry, floor is yours.
Okay. Well, one point on the 30,000 people, that's why 100,000 are under observation. I mean, these are contacts. So basically, they're trying to keep tabs on where the virus is going. And, you know, it's essentially going everywhere. I think the best example of the spread is that case you mentioned in Spain.
Yeah.
That's part of the German cluster. And that cluster is up to 9 people now confirmed. and it's in like six different cities in three different countries. And it all started with an asymptomatic visit to a company meeting. Mm-hmm. And nine, it's not stopping at nine. So just as a review, because people probably heard little pieces of this, or at least some did, and haven't really realized that they're all connected by contacts in the same virus. So the same lineage, I'm sure, is going to be in all nine of these people and some of their contacts. But this really began with a... Is that an auto parts in dealership in Bavaria? Actually, kind of suburban Munich, and they've got offices in China. And either I don't know if she was an employee or a business associate. Anyway, she was stationed in China and came to their town, or I think Starnberg is where the auto parts headquarters was. And she came for a meeting, and when she came, and while she was there, she didn't have any symptoms. And then on her way back to Shanghai, she developed symptoms. And then one of the people that was at the meeting with her developed symptoms. She ended up testing positive back in Shanghai, and then he tested positive. And then he had three other business associates at that headquarters ended up being positive. And then this chain was written up in the New England Journal of Medicine. So it came out, I think, yesterday. And they kind of detailed, I think, the first four or five. And then, let's see, we're up to one, two. It was four others, so that's four or five. That's up to six. And then a child of one of the employees at the parts store developed symptoms, and the child tested positive. And then another employee tested positive. And then a couple of the employees went on vacation in the Canary Islands, which is owned by Spain. And one of them has tested positive. So goes across three different countries. It's in China, it's in Germany, and it's in Spain. And the person who's positive in the Canary Islands was with a tour group, including a couple other employees from the company. There's so you've got one person who's definitely infected. Yeah. You got two people that have been traveling with the infected person and would have been exposed back at the office. Mm-hmm. And then you've got everybody else on the tour group that wasn't in the company, but were with the employees. And then you've got whoever they interacted with on the Canary Islands when at least one infected person arrived and possibly multiple ones.
I think about all the people trapped in that airliner.
Family members of all the employees. Yeah, and they were the airplane, and they're at this resort, and you know they've been there for. I mean, they started, I think, a couple of weeks ago now, and so they've had this exposure both at work and on their way to the Canary Islands and at the Canary Islands, and you know, I don't think it's going to stop at nine. And it started with an asymptomatic coworker, or at least a business associate, that basically infected possibly only one person at the meeting, and then that person infected the other people at the office, and then they infected at least one of their children, and I wouldn't be surprised if the one in the Canary Islands is going to infect other people that were traveling with them.
So let me ask a question. This is important. The one woman came from China, right? Chinese national, or was she a German citizen? Doesn't matter.
She was a Chinese national. All the others were German citizens, as far as I know.
All right. So European Germans, not just Chinese Germans. This is a German company, auto parts company.
Correct.
This is spread.
They specifically said when it started, they said that, you know, she was from China and the rest were Germans. So
yeah. Put one of these people, just one person who's subclinical, asymptomatic, but who's infected, and the viral load is just enough maybe to spread, and that plane is going to circulate that virus throughout the flight, and the next group of people who get on the plane are going to get exposed to it. This is how it works. Viruses love airplanes.
Anyway, this is the largest cluster that I know of so far that's been reported.
Right.
Although, you know, if you count the families and add them together, the Shenzhen cluster, that was about five people, and they had visited relatives in Wuhan. I'm not sure. It was plural, so I don't know how many people were infected there. So, you know, it's the one that's been detailed anyway. I mean, both of these clusters have been written up, but they were both written up when they're smaller than they ended up being. And the German one's just remarkable because it did start, you know, at a work environment with somebody who wasn't even symptomatic at the time of the visit. And I mean, she was probably getting pretty close, because she started to develop symptoms when she was on the plane going back. And so, you know, she was close to being symptomatic, but she had enough virus to certainly infect one at the meeting. And it could have been, you know, there were other people at the meeting. It's not clear if they got affected by her or by the index case in Germany. But he was 33, and his sequence is public, but he doesn't really match the lineages that are kind of starting to form. And there's 10 people in Australia now, and I'm not sure how many of those are linked to each other, but
10 confirmed?
Yeah, there's 10 confirmed in Australia. I'm not sure they're all one cluster. I'm not even sure they're in one area. The sequence from Victoria has been made public, and that lineage is the same lineage as the cluster in France. And that cluster is, I think, getting up to 6 or 7. I think that involves a doctor towards the end of that string of people that were infected. And that cluster is also in Orange County, California, and also in Taiwan. So that cluster is, that lineage is involved in at least 2 good-sized clusters, and you know, multiple countries that have, you know, reported it and submitted the virus for sequencing. And so the Shenzhen cluster that I talked about, now a sequence was released from Wuhan at the very beginning. So that lineage has been identified, you know, early on in Wuhan. So it was in Wuhan, then it went to Shenzhen, and then it's gone to 4 of the 5 locations. Well, actually, I don't know what the last one is, Santa Clara, you know, just happened. So I'm not sure what that sequence is. But of the 6 before that, one of the Chicago, the index to Chicago has been released. And I'm sure her husband is going to have the same virus. And then it's also in in Washington and Los Angeles and Phoenix. So those are all the same cluster. So the same lineage. So there's a few different lineages that are showing up in multiple locations and associated with multiple clusters. But the countries keep on expanding. I mean, Finland had their first case. Sweden had their first case. India had their first case. Philippines had their first case.
Mm-hmm.
Those were all reported today. So
Siberia also reported a case.
Two. They're right. Mm-hmm. There's two in Siberia. One a little bit by Mongolia, and the other one considerably further west. So they're both in Siberia, but they're nowhere near each other.
Right.
And those are the first two that are coming out of Russia. So it's they are popping up all over. And
let me ask you to do this, Henry. Hold on. Let me ask you just to pull back, Dr. Henry Nyman, the mind, pull back and look at the world and look at this epidemic, where it is now, where it came from, and where you see it going. It sounds to me like it's a classic textbook case, but it's attenuated and made worse by these subclinical cases who are spreaders, who are undetectable, essentially, symptom-free. That's kind of an eight ball in this whole thing.
Well, the other eight ball, in addition to people that are asymptomatic and moving the virus around, is going to be the fact that this is happening in the winter during flu season. And a lot of people are going to think they just have the flu, and a lot of people are going to go online and they're going to see, this is a cold virus. You know, the coronavirus has been around for a long time. The media is overreacting, and that's really, it's just a cold virus, and
so they're going to keep walking
nothing,
and talking,
nothing new,
so, and spreading it,
right? So exactly. So they're going to say, well, it's a cold virus. I've had colds before; they weren't that bad. Mm-hmm. This doesn't seem that bad yet, and it doesn't even have to get that bad. Yeah. That they can spread it even before they have symptoms, and they can be spreading it when they're so. I mean, what's being reported is pretty much people self-reporting. It's not like people are getting picked up at the border; they're getting screened at the border. But the number of actual positives at the border is going to be limited. So most of the people that do come in don't get detected. They develop symptoms. The ones that get reported probably report them pretty early because they're well aware that they came from China, for instance, and that they're glad they're not in China, but now they've got a scratchy throat or a cough or a sneeze, and they'll go to the doctor and say that I'm from China, and they'll get tested. But other people will come and in some cases they won't have been from China, but they'll still get exposed because it's showing up in all of these other cities. And it's the same thing with China. I mean, the emphasis was on Wuhan, and Wuhan certainly has the most number of cases. But Wuhan is, they're around 7,000 cases now, and confirmed. They don't tell you how many suspects there are. The suspects are just given in the aggregate, so you just have to confirm. But they have 7,000 confirmed cases, and there's almost 12,000 confirmed cases. So there's almost as many cases outside of Hubei than inside of Hubei now. And As you've seen in the last couple of days, there's 5,000 new cases a day. Now, SARS was only like 8,000 cases in the whole 6 months.
Totally.
So there's the equivalent of a new SARS almost every day now, or at least every other day. And pretty soon, the other cities will overtake Hubei. Hubei's up to 7,000. They're up to 5,000. And, you know, pretty soon there'll be more outside of Hubei than inside of Hubei. So then it'll be, well, you're worried about people in China, you know, and it won't just be China. I mean, the Philippines or Thailand, they're up to 19 cases now.
And remember what the Thai government said, Henry.
They can't stop it, and that's because
they said they've admitted it. They can't stop it.
The 19th case was a taxi driver. So, I mean, this is a guy that picked somebody up at the airport or something, took them to their hotel, and now he's positive. And that's what's going to happen over and over again. There's a couple in Japan that are tour bus drivers. So, again, they're just transporting people probably from the airport to a hotel, and now they're positive. And, you know, these are the ones that are most at risk, and those are the ones that, you know, are going to probably be identified, more likely to be identified. But other people that come into contact with tourists, or other people that rode in this guy's taxi.
Thank you. And that's the same thing with an airliner. I will always talk about airline cabin circulation from one flight to the next. They don't flush the ducts. They don't clean the thing out. They just pick up a new load and carry on. And if there's someone heavily shedding virus in there, it's going to be in there.
Yeah. I mean, they usually take for the airlines is three rows either side. But in any event, it's still a lot of people. And that's per person. If you have more than one passenger that's infected, then it's going to be even more than that. So it is going
to
be
places. If you've been listening to this program for any length of time, you'll know
we're going to, Todd, we're going to go through the break. Thank you. It's okay. All right.
And so people are going to get exposed without even realizing they're exposed. And that's why I think, you know, the idea that they're going to try quarantines is just, it's going to be too little too late. It's something that, you know, maybe when it wasn't just Wuhan, but, you know, by the time they're focusing on Wuhan, it was literally all over the country. I mean, it's in every province in China now. And the numbers,
5 million people fled Wuhan before the lid came down.
And I'm just looking at now these are confirmed cases. These, you can probably figure there's twice as many suspect cases.
Double test to be confirmed in China. Double test.
Beijing has got 537 confirmed. Guangdong has got 436. Henan has 352. Hunan has 332. Anhui has 237. Chongqing has 238. Jiangxi has 240. I mean, all of these numbers are much higher than Hubei was a month ago, or probably not even that long ago. I mean, Hubei started at like 40. It's the number when it was clear that they had a test that could detect it. It was they were 41, or they were sitting at 41 for 3 or 4 days, and people started, you know, they were showing up outside of the country. They were showing up in Thailand and Japan, and I saying, well, you got people showing up in Thailand and Japan, how come you still only have 41 people in Hubei? And that's when the estimates started coming out and saying, oh, there must be, you know, I think they came in at 1,700 plus or minus, so they were from 400 to 4,000 or something was the estimate. But that was based on either two or three exports at the time. There were two in Thailand and one in Japan. And based on that and how many people fly there and how many people, the odds of picking them up was some astronomical number because there aren't that many flights that go to those two countries, and there's 11 million people in Hubei, or 19 million if you count the metropolitan area. So there's 19 million people, and you're picking up three of them. If you got 19 million and 1,900 or even 19,000 fly on a plane, well, it's 1,000 to 1. And if you've got three, that means, well, you got 3,000 people in the city. If you're going to identify these three by just screening, 19,000. But I don't think there are 19,000 in that time period to fly there. It's probably, I don't know. It's significantly less than that.
By the way, I just want to make another point. We began these programs with Henry, the first non-scheduled appearance to cover this issue was January the 8th. Now, here we are on January 31st, and look what has happened just in 3.5 weeks. I mean, that's really something. The darkest part of this epidemic that Henry has been the man to bring forward is the number of people who have had their illness resolved, the case resolutions. No one's talking about this, and it may be the single most important part, or certainly one of the crux issues. How many people are shaking this virus, beating it, and being released from hospitals? And the numbers are tragically low.
It's right around 50-50 now. The number of died is just slightly above the number that has been released. And the number that died, I think, is I think it's around 270 or something. I had it. I don't have it right in front of me now. But it's less than 300. So that's how many have been released. It's, I think, around 250 for both of them, those two numbers. So half of the people that have a resolution have died.
I want to repeat this. This is not the kind of virus you get as a flu and you throw it off in a week or so. It doesn't work that way. This is very tenacious, and it becomes embedded, and people slowly just get worse and worse. And there are no beds in any hospitals in Wuhan. The story again from the New Zealand paper is that they are taking people immediately when they die and cremating them, trying to stop the spread of any potential viruses that way. This failure to resolve cases. In other words, the virus is that obstinate. It's vicious. Is a very bad indicator of where this is going.
And keep in mind, this is pretty much pneumonia patients. People that are very very mild cases. If they're a contact, they'll be tested. If they're not a contact, the likelihood is that they're not going to be tested. And they're not in these numbers. So when there's 30,000. 30,000 that have been PCR confirmed either once or twice. The vast majority of those 30,000 people are people that have developed pneumonia, and that's part of their case definition. So I mean, they have to have pneumonia pretty much to get tested, and so the fatality rate may be a little bit lower in people that are in other countries. They're going to go to the doctor as soon as they have a little bit of a cough because of the situation in China, and they'll get tested. They go in and say, "I'm from Wuhan, and you got this fever, and I'm concerned." The doctor will be concerned also, and they'll notify the health department. The health department will we'll make sure that they're tested. But the testing part is kind of tricky. And the third case in Ontario was just announced today. And that case initially tested negative, actually tested negative at the state level. So the initial test was negative, but they were concerned about, she was a student and she had been, in Wuhan, and she was in her 20s, and they went ahead and sent the sample to the national labs in Winnipeg, and the national labs had a more sensitive and a more, I think they did five tests, whereas the state labs did two tests. And I think each of these tests is a different region of the gene. And of the genome, and they ended up testing her positive. She ended up testing positive at the state lab. The national lab, not the state lab. So, and she was a weak positive, but she's confirmed. And usually, if they're doing a PCR test, even if it's a weak positive, they generally can amplify it and get a sequence of the region between the primers. They basically put two primers down, and the PCR reaction fills in the space by copying the genetic information, and then they can read that small copy piece and then compare that to what the gene looks like and confirmed that it really is the novel coronavirus, because the pieces will in generally be 100% identical because it's just a short region. And so they'll have, even though it was a weak signal, they'll have a confirmation that it really is that virus, because that's what the middle part between the primers is composed of, copying the template that those two primers are bound to, and then you get the sequence. So, and they've done that. There's a few partial sequences that have been released, and I recall those were from patients that were weak positives, but they were able to do that. And then in some cases, once they get going there, they can actually get the full sequence directly from the samples, and some of the sequences that have been released are from weaker cases also. So there are ways, even on a low viral load, if you work at it, you can come up with a positive. And now the Ontario lab is kind of switching over and using the more sensitive test that the state, the national lab is using. And it'll be the same thing in the United States right now. I think that the tests are going out to some of the larger states now, or probably the West Coast. I mean, most of the cases have been in the West. It's a cluster in Chicago.
Well, you got, you got Seattle, you got the Bay Area now, you got L.A., so it's moving.
Yeah, and Arizona, right, and also British Columbia is positive. But the cluster in Chicago may be growing. The grandson of the two positives in Chicago has a fever and is being tested, and it's possible that that cluster is going to begin to grow also. And I'm not sure how long it's. I'm not sure if they're screening that there, that has to go to the CDC. Of course, it doesn't take that long to get to the CDC, and there, I don't think they're that backed up. But I think the numbers that they've got now, suspect cases, these are people that basically are coming from China, or think they might even be coming from Wuhan, and directly or indirectly. I think there's some that are coming indirectly now. So they were in Wuhan, and they went to some other city in China, and now they're flying back from another location, but they've got a travel history through Wuhan, so they're getting screened also. And they're bumping up the number of airports that they're doing the screening at. I think think they're going up to 7, and they're kind of funneling the passengers to those. And then they're quarantining the 195 that came from China. And the reason for the quarantining is because they're concerned about the long incubation period.
That's right.
And the
2 weeks.
Inability to detect the virus is, if it's in the lower respiratory tract. So those
by the
195
way, that,
people.
Yeah, two. They're going to be at least 2 weeks. That 10-year-old boy, if we remember, who tested negative, but had it in his lower lungs, in the bottom of his lungs, apparently was showing some damage in the lungs in the CAT scan. Now, this brings up SARS. I remember clearly that there were a number of people who survived it who had what was described as permanent damage, either neurological damage or physical damage, possibly to the lungs. I don't remember which. But even if you survive this, and relatively very few are being discharged, keep that in mind. It's crucial to understanding the dynamics of this thing. If you do survive it, you may well end up with some kind of permanent damage. That little boy showed it in the CAT scan. That was the first and only thing I've seen that would underscore what I'm saying, but it was real. And this, we don't know what the potential is for long-term damage if you survive it.
Yeah, so it's something that's a problem and is getting worse, and the numbers are, you know, in an exponential phase now, and that's why, I mean, at the CDC held a telebriefing to announce that the quarantine, but they prefaced it. I mean, it was, they're usually playing down almost everything. And
yes.
They weren't playing down this time. They were saying that they were preparing for a pandemic. I mean, this isn't what my reading between the lines. They actually said that. And they said that they were going to be, hoping, preparing for the worst and hoping for the best type of thing. And
that's not encouraging. We're talking about cities not necessarily locked down like Wuhan, but that could happen. Closing of schools, public events, anywhere people get together, concerts, you name it. They're not going to happen.
Absolutely. Well, that's definitely happening.
Yeah.
Go ahead. This is definitely happening in China right now. And, they're limiting, they're quarantining people that have been to Wuhan within the last 14 days. So they're quarantining those people because they're afraid of false negatives. And several airlines have actually stopped flying. And I'm not sure if it's Wuhan or if it's China. And as the U.S. issued the travel warning, and CDC had a level 3, and then the State Department did a level 4, and so they're warning against going to China, period, not just Wuhan. And it's clearly got their attention, you know, and they passed a fake so that, you know, the WHO says a public health emergency of international concern. And they're really sitting up and taking notice. And this announcement that the CDC made just kind of tanked the stocks. Stocks went down like 600 points right after that. So investors are worried what it's going to do to the economy. If China's shut down to the world economy, if China is basically closed off from the rest of the world for a month or two, and there's no guarantee for a month or two. I mean, the duration part is, again, it got to kind of look at the parallels with SARS. And SARS really didn't get going until March and probably peaked in April. And, you know, with an exponential growth for a month or two is you can do the math. You probably don't want to do the math, but anyway, it's a really big number. And so, that's that's what the concern is it's certainly not having any indication of slowing down. And there was one report that, you know, they're going to target, I think, 11 cities in China to make sure those cities recover. And they might not have the resources to do anything other than those 11 cities. I mean, these are all large cities, but they're, there's certainly a lot more than 11 cities in China. And so exactly how it's trying to get resolved and how quickly it's trying to get resolved, I don't think anybody's got a good answer on that. There's just, you know, a reasonable amount of concern. And exactly when it's going to start leveling out, I mean, the only reason it leveled out to a degree was because they weren't doing the second test. So the suspect cases were going
up. There you
go. And the,
they just weren't doing the second test. That's a very important point. Another one.
Or they didn't have the resources to do it. It's kind of like, you know, they could do X number of confirmations a day, and if the number of new cases exceeded that, then that would happen, that the confirmed would only go up as quickly as they could do the second test, and the suspect would go higher. You know, it would start to increase. And people are starting to take note of that now. I mean, the media reports still pretty much just talk about confirmed cases. But there's a number of sites that are basically, you know, doing daily updates, or some are even doing hourly updates, and they're associated with mapping. And that's problems with the suspect cases is they don't get broken down very much. I mean, like Hubei doesn't talk about their suspect cases at all, but they do have, you know, lots of suspect cases, and they show up in the aggregate. So the daily report comes out, and it basically says what happened that day, and then it gives totals, and the suspect cases, they don't break that down by province or by city. They just kind of give it a one line at the end. There's X number of suspect cases, and so you can't really map them. But the maps put that now in the key. You know, they go and they say, this is the map of the confirmed cases, and then they give a list of all the parameters, the confirmed cases, the suspect cases, the deaths, and the discharges. So they give all four of those numbers on the map. They don't map them, but they give you the running total. And so people are starting to pay attention to that, and they're seeing that this big number, I mean, right now is, you know, close to 20,000 or 18,000. There's 18,000 suspect cases on top of almost 12,000 confirmed cases. And,
well,
you know, the
30.
Numbers were only 7,000 or 8,000 for all of SARS. So both of those numbers are significantly above that. And, you know, it's 30,000 a day. It was 25,000 yesterday, and it was 20,000 the day before. So it's gone up 10,000 in 2 days. And that's, you know, like 1.5 SARS outbreaks. So
if you read anyone who's trying to compare this and downplay this vis-a-vis SARS, just remember, they're totally wrong, completely wrong. News story go ahead.
No, go ahead with your story.
South China Morning Post, Wuhan doctors beaten up, overworked, and undersupplied.
Yeah.
Medical workers treating people infected with the coronavirus in the central China city say they are fighting more than just a viral outbreak. Doctors said he overheard a waiting patient threaten to stab someone, but killing a few of us won't reduce the line, right? In other words, the patient was very upset. He wasn't being treated quickly enough, and he was threatening to stab one of the doctors. And so, there you go.
And it's got the potential to get much worse than that. I mean,
one doctor hasn't been home in 2 weeks, he said. Not 2 weeks.
Well, I think the other thing you got to see are shortages. I mean, they're running out of masks in China, and
correct.
That's going to draw down the inventory everywhere, and then you're going to have people both in China and out of China that want a mask, and they're told they're back ordered. They certainly don't want to hear that.
Well,
so there'll be those types of issues on just basic equipment, and I think they were running out of hazmat suits. And yes, that too.
A mask warehouse shipment in Hong Kong, 25,000 masks was stolen from a warehouse. So Hong Kong is petrified about this.
Yeah, and then there was concerns about just supply chains. That, you know, a lot of drugs get manufactured in China. If they're shutting down their factories,
yes, they do.
Then there can be shortages worldwide because unless they start picking up production elsewhere. But usually, you know, they have these $100 million plants type of a thing. And, you know, there's a lot of, it's not that you can just turn the switch and all of a sudden.
300 million chickens in Wuhan are dying. They're not getting feed delivered. They're going to die. So this is really enormous.
This is well into the rumor stage. So, you know, I haven't confirmed this. But I heard that animals are starting to get infected with the virus, and maybe even
where did cats. You hear that, Henry?
I just heard that.
I don't need a name. I mean, what was the general gist of the source?
The gist of the story was that the animals are starting to get sick in China. And,
oh my!
From the virus, and
we got to watch that too.
I probably shouldn't even said that because I haven't really confirmed that. I was just told that.
Well, and, if you didn't say it, somebody else would soon enough, so it's okay.
Yeah. Now, speaking of rumors, this is more than a rumor. There's a news story that's been making the rounds, and I thought I should mention it because it's all over Twitter now. I was really surprised at how much traction it had taken. And there's a site that is kind of a pre-publication site. So it's for scientific articles and that haven't undergone peer review, but they're available and you can read them and download them. And, you know, they look like an article and they are an article, you know. Theoretically in the future, but they haven't really been published yet, and they haven't gone through the peer review. And this was a group, I think, from India, and they were actually looking at the sequences of the virus. And they saw that there were some areas of different genes that there seemed to be gaps, you know, and I don't even remember which way it went, whether there's a deletion or there's an insertion. And so they were trying to figure out where that deletion and insertion went from. And so they took those very small areas and they did a blast. So they just basically probed the gene bank. And they ended up coming with HIV sequences. So they got matches with HIV.
Yeah. I just emailed you that story. You already have it.
Okay. It's all over the place. So, you know, their conclusion was that there's like four regions on the spike protein and there's something on the structural proteins and, they're all matching HIV. And they're saying that this was very, I don't remember what they used a word. I'm trying to remember the word that they used. But
strange.
Anyway,
how about was, strangely coincidental?
But it was along those lines. And
yeah, I understand.
And when I saw just the title and what they were saying, and they had these reasons, I haven't really read through the paper, but my immediate response was, I'll bet you they're using very short sequences. And when I looked at the picture, picture and the sequences they had, they were, I don't know, 4 or 6 amino acid type regions, maybe 10 amino acids, but they were relatively small. And I've done that experiment. I did that experiment 17 years ago. And if you go, you take a short sequence like that and you put it in the gene bank, you end up getting HIV matches. And the reason you get HIV matches, I was actually doing it for SARS, and I was also doing it for viruses, flu viruses. And the viruses all have kind of a basic type of a structure, and if you take a small probe that you're going to look for, you're going to get pretty much whatever is at the highest levels in gene bank, and that's HIV sequences. So they're coming up with HIV sequences as matches because they're taking a small segment and they're putting it up against a huge number of HIV and a very small number of coronaviruses. So they can't find a bat coronavirus that matches, but they get an HIV sequence and they write up a paper. And that's what they've written up. And believe me, it is nothing. I did that experiment 17 years ago, and I got a lot of HIV sequences if I made the probe short enough. And that's
very
exactly what
important information. Thank you for sharing that.
So that HIV is man-made, but it's man-made at gene bank. And it's in their paper, but it doesn't exist in these people for sure.
The article is saying that this argues for an artificially created bioweapon. That's where these things go.
The sequence was definitely artificially created, but it does not exist in nature or in pandemic.
Very good. Very important.
Real.
All right. Great information, Henry. Thank you. I'll be here, as you will, working on this all weekend. We'll talk to you Monday. If there's something really terrible that happens, we might even try to go live Sunday night. I don't know if that's possible, but we'll be back Monday and bring everybody up to date. 5,000 new cases a day. That's the way it's been running.
By Monday, it'll probably be closer to 10, but we'll see. But it's not going down anytime soon. Eventually, it's going to go down, but I'm not sure when and why.
Okay.
Have a good weekend, and we'll check in again on Monday. Okay, take care.
Good night. All right, and we have to run. Do enjoy your weekend, and we'll keep you informed at the site and certainly on the program on Monday. Take care. Talk soon.